love sunshine. I think it's great. So I'd like to begin the talk by stating the Buddha. This is the clear foundation and the original teaching that we're offering, even though it may have gone through a few changes over the years, over the centuries, you can say. But there is a real depth to this teaching, which manifests in these lines. So the Buddha gave some remarkable advice just before his passing away on how to approach the teachings. And he said, four reliances, what you can rely on. The first, rely on the teaching, not on the person. Rely on the teaching, not on the person. The second, rely on the meaning, not on the words. The third, rely on the definite meaning, not on the provisional, meaning the temporary experience comes and goes. The definite meaning is what is the outcome, the precise definite meaning of being the Dhamma as a realization. The fourth, rely on your wisdom mind, not on your ordinary mind. Rely on your wisdom mind, not on your ordinary mind. This Dhamma that I have attained is profound, hard to see and hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle to be experienced by the wise. So this, as a source of inspiration, can give us kind of the depth of what we're actually trying to realize. And the last line that is being offered is, it is attainable by way of the inner process of maturation. A maturing of the inner process. Which means that there's so much to actually see, understand, and it is a process of awakening. Truly, deeply awakening. Awakening from confusion. Really deep down, what Yuka talked about last night, those hindrances, the desires and the aversions, and maybe sometimes the laziness and the doubts, everything that manifests really has one source. And that source is the source of confusion or delusion, that actually we don't quite see clearly. And what we're being offered again and again, by way of mindfulness and by way of many other qualities, is to see more and more quickly. And that clarity is the wake-up call. Wake-up call. So this also is summed up in the Mahapadana Sutta, which is very clearly, this is quite extraordinary. If you want to sum up the teaching, one way to do it is very clear. Avoid doing harm by way of wise behavior. Avoid doing harm. And to avoid doing harm, in terms of behavior nowadays, in the world, wow, you gotta have some mindfulness, I tell you. I don't know if you... If you realize how easy it is to be confused, at least for me, maybe not for you, but wow, so much confusion. I mean, what do we rely on? If you look at the words and you don't look at the meaning, it's immense, the dimension of confusion. So avoid doing all harm. This quality of, first of all, trying not to harm ourselves. It begins here. And the clarity, how do we discern what is harmful for ourselves and what's not? By way of connection, the felt sense. Our lives are so scattered, so disconnected, you can say, that the way that confusion is manifesting is actually by way of indifference. What is happening in the world today? And we're seeing it, and we deny the reality because it feels too painful to actually feel. But I think there's nothing worse than stepping out of the feeling, because we become then indifferent. So this is exactly the opposite that we are asked to do, to actually feel so connected and noticing what is it that is causing the pain when I'm by myself. And then very naturally, by way of extension, it will be the same, absolutely the same attitude, the same way in relationship to our friends, those we don't know, and those that we call the enemies. So avoiding the doing of all harm, this quality of connecting and seeing that we can do the best we can to live with integrity, with respect. The second has everything to do with the reverse, accomplishing what's good. What's good for us is good for another. This is the common factor that we have as human beings. So it's pretty clear that a quality of kindness can never hurt. It can never harm anyone. A quality of gentleness, of compassion, of steadiness, of presence, of respect. So this has to do with our way of living in our life. Avoiding doing harm, accomplishment of what's good. The third and last is purifying one's own mind, or liberating the mind, which is absolutely happening in terms of not only our behavior in relationships or in relationship to ourselves, but that is the whole aspect and prospect of the meditation process. The more we actually look closely, the more we see, we connect so deeply with what is happening within, the more we are then able to avoid harm and accomplish the good. So all of these three, they're completely intertwined. There's cause and effect. Now, it's said very clearly that there are three sources of wisdom in the teaching. Wisdom is the goal. Liberation is the goal. Understanding is the goal. Mindfulness is the means. Now, so often we're saying, I went to a conference long ago and said, remember, be mindful, remember, be mindful. And so it was this whole word about the mindfulness, you know, gang. And one person was annoyed and she went to the to the board and she said, do you know why you're mindful? Be aware to know why you're mindful. You know, what are we mindful for? For a sense of purpose, which is hopefully just more than just being aware to attend the moment. There's a real sense of of progress. And she was right. So mindful to wake up, mindful to be aware, mindful to relate better to the world, to not get so reactive, mindful to be more patient, maybe. Many, many different meanings. But there are three sources of wisdom, and these are very helpful to hear. The first source of wisdom that is happening is hearing wise words, hearing the teaching, reading the teaching, all the source of wisdom that comes from outside, that balances, actually, the words of confusion or hatred or unwise action. So hearing is one way. The second is we hear and then we reflect on what we heard. Right? Don't we? There's a sense of reflection. We use our thinking mind. And by way of thinking, we actually have an extraordinary capacity to make choices. And that is so huge. The capacity that when you are aware, you can actually make a choice. Take this direction or take that direction. And it will change. Not only maybe your well-being, but it may change your neighbor's condition and this person's condition. So it's so helpful to understand that there is an interconnected path. We're not here in isolation. Everything that you see for yourself will be a source of wisdom that you can see grow for other beings, all of those you will meet. So hearing, reflecting, using the thinking mind wisely. And the third is called experiential wisdom. By way of meditation. And that third is intuitive. What does it mean, intuitive? It means that it doesn't need to go through a concept. Right? We don't need to have the thought filter that understanding. That's what we call insight in practice. Insight. Oh, I've had an insight. It's an intuition, actually. It comes from a living experience. So the two first are very clearly coming and feeding the intellect. Everything that's intellectual, right? And it's so good that we have that source. But for a true transformation, there needs to be a little more understanding than just the intellectual understanding. And this is why we are on retreat. To deepen that connection, to live that experience, the nature of a sensation, not the thought about, oh yes, now it's really painful. And then I think and I think and I think and I kind of revolve around my thoughts and how can I get rid of that? And that's not enough. That you're just creating a whirlwind, right? A cycle that stays at the same level. So we change levels. These three sources, they are also interconnected. And it's not just one. So this is the highest wisdom. If we just go for the meditation and we don't actually take in the depth of the understanding, it's not going to change our life a bit. You absolutely need to hear that what you experience here, you reflect upon it. And how you reflect upon it, then it is how you're going to be maybe making a change in your lives. So these are the bridges. What we hear, we think about. What we think about, we reflect. What we experience in meditation, we then apply to our lives. And more so important today than ever. So it's beautiful. It's totally exciting. Because so many of us are kind of coming to the practice, and there's a little bit, maybe not here in Finland, but there's a bit when I hear, oh yeah, meditation retreat, just, you know, the whole world out. And, oh, peace. Get out. And it's true. You have some restoration. You really get some benefit. You need the inner resources more than ever. The valuable resources of more stability, more calm, more tranquility, more understanding, more kindness already towards yourself. But it needs to be a sense of purpose for the change in the world today. The world is at risk. So I'm not putting any fear. I'm just giving you a huge encouragement to tell you how meaningful this is, what we're doing. So it's much more than a technique. It's an attitude. It's a behavior. It's a way of life. And it touches the earth and the way we treat the earth, the environment. There's so many, many, many reasons that we can bring this wonderful practice towards. So mind development. Living as best we can. An untrained mind, says the Buddha in the Dhammapada, does more harm than an enemy does to another enemy. An untrained mind. A well-trained mind does more good for you than any of your helpful relatives. So, it begins here. We make our minds our friend with a caring attitude, and it's possible to do that. So this line was from the Dhammapada. So we begin with body awareness. We begin to stabilize the attention just for the sake of already connecting. Because many of us, and I'm counting myself, you know, in the realm of beings that have a lot of things to do, and we want to get so much done in such little time, the speed of the world is actually so incredibly crazy that as human beings, we really need to sense that there is a need to actually stop, pause. For sanity, first of all, to regain some sense of balance and some sense of connection. So we stabilize, we establish this quality of presence within a body contact because the living experience is in the body and the body is always here. That's what's so magnificent to have bodies. You know, it can't fly away, and if you treat it not very fairly, it's going to say something, you know? And you don't want it to be falling sick. So there's a real sense of being able to say, hey, I need to respect this body. In the same way, we need to respect our mind. So, at least in Switzerland now, there's a very great concerned about what food we eat, which wasn't at all the case maybe 10, 15 years ago. You know, we wouldn't, all this kind of junk food. And now, wow, people are so concerned about, you know, what they eat, right? We too, probably, here. In the same way, we begin to have a sense of, wow, what kind of food do we give to our minds? You know, how many hours do we stay on the computer? How many hours do we watch junk movies? I mean, what is the food? And it's fascinating to notice this. And so it's not to get rid of anything, but just out of a sense of balance. And so we can learn what causes the happiness and what causes kind of also the imbalance and the stress. How, when we are stressed, maybe we practice stress. So there's a real wisdom in this. It's just so amazing that it's a pull. It's our task. It's so delicate in a way. But it's beneficial. So we actually have a sense of embodiment. Embodiment. But then there's the whole aspect of looking at the mind. Of course, right? There's a connection. If there's wisdom, it's in the mind. If there's clarity, it's in the mind. We understand by way of consciousness. And it's fascinating how we can create whole worlds and universes in our minds by way of imagination, the virtual world. Fantasizing, creating so many stories. To the extent that we lose touch with reality. So we create whole worlds and universes. And then these universes, they become real to us. And this is exactly what happens with constructs, with ideas. We construct constructs by way of thoughts. By way of thoughts. And then we live in this content. And we don't even notice the difference between reality and what's not the reality. So when we wake up, when we come here and we really sense a little bit more the connection, have you noticed your mind today? Have you been aware of what your thoughts were saying a little bit more? Isn't it fascinating? Sometimes boring, sometimes scary. How many thoughts? How many stories? How many moods? It's incredible what the mind can create. So thought themselves are not the problem. I think that is so important. Because if we shut down the mind just for meditation, then what will happen when we live in our lives? We won't know how to work with this type of manifestation of expression. Don't you agree? So I think it's so important that this practice actually also helps us see how to be in relationship with the thoughts, rather than just wanting to get rid of them. Because thinking is happening. It is happening. We're often not aware of it, but it is happening. So we become aware of the thoughts. In the same way we can be aware of breath or body sensation. And I find that part of the practice so fascinating. It's quite exciting, actually, to be in the presence of your own mind. And so you can be quite clearly noticing the content, the storytelling mind. But you can also be very present by way of awareness to notice thought appears and disappears. Not so solid. That story. Not so solid. Have you ever noticed a thought appear and disappear? Probably yes. Right? Do you understand the meaning of this? They're not permanent. Wow. That was a huge insight when I saw that the first time. I thought, wow, there's so much I can do here. In terms of beneficial and balance, quality of presence. Because often we're the victims of the stories. We're the victims of our minds. And yet we're not. Not at all. Victimizing is we're not taking a stand. That's the ordinary mind, as the Buddha would say. The wise mind can discern. And there's actually a very clear teaching from the Buddha discerning wise thoughts or wholesome thoughts from unwholesome thoughts. So we can begin to discern. It's fascinating. So we create a whole world, the narrative. This morning, I waited for everybody yesterday to take a shower. Did everybody take their shower yesterday? Probably not. Some? So this morning, I thought to myself, while you were sitting at 7 with Yuka, I'm probably going to be the first or second. It's going to be so pleasant to have a warm shower. To be underneath that shower. And oh, it's so nice actually, because some time has passed. And I just had a whole pleasant fantasy about the time of the shower. You probably did too, no? At some point before it happened or while it was happening. And I went in the shower. The reality was not at all corresponding to the fantasy. The water was cold. I had plenty of soap. I decided to wash my hair, as you can see. It's all fresh. And in the middle of the shower, washing the hair, suddenly the light went out. Totally dark. Couldn't see a thing. I thought, how can do this to me? The story, right? So what am I going to do now? Fascinating. I decide, okay, I'm going to turn it on again. I open the door of the shower. The light comes back. Wow, great. There's a sensor. That's what I understand. It's upstairs, in case you want to go to that shower. And then, relief. Okay? I totally forgot about the cold water. I was so happy that I had the light. This is exactly how it works. It's so great. One moment, you're happy, and then you're happy you're ready to see something. Then I walk out. And Yuka lends me her hair dryer, 1 second, blowing, put it out to brush the hair, back on, doesn't work. Out. And there I am. Oh my goodness. I broke her hair dryer. I hand it to her. Oh yes, I didn't tell her. She says, it's on the American voltage because I just came back from America. So it was working. We create mini universes of everything, isn't it? It's fascinating. So if you don't have the discerning mind, the wise mind, you go crazy with a story like that one. temper. That's what happens with stories that are a little more probably charged than the one that I just counted. But then I forgot everything, and as I said, I went for a beautiful, pleasant walk. And so that was the pleasant part of that morning. So it's fascinating because it's all with thought, looking at the thought, the idea being very clear of the pleasantness about the anticipation of that, the reality, being open and clear to actually be in that situation with balance and mindfulness and just say, okay, what's the next move now? And not get completely lost in the reactivity, right? And so there's a balance of mindfulness which helps the clear seeing. And this is exactly what is manifesting in each and every moment. So the problem, if there is one, it's our relationship to the thoughts. And it's not the thoughts themselves. It's how we relate, how we actually engage, and how we see the quality of the mind that is meeting what is to be met. That's exactly where the meditation is happening. Thoughts will come and go. Nice thoughts, pleasant thoughts, unpleasant thoughts, dramatic thoughts. The storytelling mind has no end. It will happen. We lose sight of the process. We get caught in the content. Pleasant content, unpleasant content. But how we relate, seeing it for what it is. Inviting you to really clearly see, sense, live that experience from the place of awareness. Now, of course, we'll get lost in that process. This is why maybe we don't want to go in that area, right? Oh, I don't want to get lost. I want to stay. My breath. Breath, the refuge, right? And so, attached to the breath. I've done that many years, you know. I can tell you. Maybe not the only one. I was very clearly holding on to security. But I think it's very helpful, actually, to have a balanced attitude where, yes, there is a ground, there is an anchor, and we can always have that place which you can call a place of refuge or safety. It's helpful. Or whatever anchor. Doesn't need to be the breath. You can use another anchor. Because this is the place of rest. But life is an adventure, people. Life is an adventure. Life is the unknown. It is uncertain. So if you live in that space, that area, breath, what's going to happen when you go out? Everything out. And then my little cushion, my meditation, my seat. So it's so helpful to really understand that we're practicing for liberation. And liberation can only happen in terms of opening a little bit ourselves to the unknown and not making it just comfortable for ourselves. I love the line, Saito Tejiniya, whom I've had as a teacher. He says, check again and again whether when you're beginning a sit, you're sitting, you're meditating to have a pleasant sit or to wake up. The factor of motivation is absolutely essential. Why are we practicing? Now, of course, you may choose comfort. You're free. You know, you may choose comfort. But as a teacher, I will tell you, it is very limited. Because life changes. Because experiences arise and pass. Because we cannot control having always the pleasant and never have pain. That's not our predicament. So I think much better at times to play it safe, but also to be a little bit adventurous. And that means stepping out of the known. And that means it's okay to actually explore a little bit the mind. And yes, there is a storytelling and there's a content, and you actually follow it a little bit, you get lost. And eventually, you'll come back, rather than stay in a very limited area of investigation. So lost in the content of our thoughts. Very helpful when this moment of realizing this, you can be happy. You realize you've been lost and you wake up. There's a choice here, right? That choice is that you're here again in that moment. You are again aware. The moment before you were lost, yeah? You get that? Yeah? But the moment you realize, oh, I was lost, you're aware, right? And that moment is a very precious moment. It's a very precious moment because it's a moment where you can actually realize that you're connected. And you can even discern and reflect, what was the thought about? Not spending too much time, but you recognize you're actually in the living process. You gain strength again and you can be in connection. It's knowing. What's the thought about the snow? Do you like it? Or no, it should be spring. It's what it is, huh? So that exploration can be done very wisely. One moment you connect, you take really some food from the body experience, the care, the mindfulness, and very clearly you can naturally allow yourself to see the thinking mind. And you can even hear label. It's very helpful. Especially if it's recurrent, right? We all have habits. Whether our thinking mind goes to the past, we relive past events, or maybe it's anticipating, going in the future. So to label it, oh, planning, this is planning. Or remembering. And there's a whole field of exploration which is commenting. The commentary of what is happening here and now. Do you have that little kind of voice in the back, the narrative? And that voice in the back, we think it's not part of the meditation, but in fact it is that little voice that has always something to say, right? Do you have it? Oh, this is good. This is not good. Good breath. Not a good breath. Nice breath. Oh, pain. Not pain. It's fascinating. It has so many things to say. It just wants to say something. It just wants to chat. It wants to keep you company. So you don't feel so alone. But if you treat it as something separate, then it's not part of the exploration, and you create some separation. So it's fascinating to notice. And then all the comments that you may have around other people. You know, what kind of socks they wear today. You have to really imagine that this is happening all the time, except we don't notice because we're busy. Here there's nothing to do. You can't even read. Can you imagine? So of course the mind is craving, screaming for something to be occupied with at the level that it knows. The mental level. It wants food. So it's probably going to look at the postcards. Here there's plenty to look at. I tell you, I could just... I'm going crazy. Sometimes it's just like, wow. Zen, a zendo. Totally. Here, it's fascinating. The owls and the mugs and the beard. Everything that you can have a commentary about. So actually, it's quite fun. But it's a very different thing, just getting lost in it and just storytelling mind, than actually this wise mind that looks in a way that it's fueling the understanding. What's being known here? What is there to understand? What's the relationship? From the place of process, what can I learn? There's a desire, and maybe there's a feeling of sadness underneath. There's a whole array of emotions that are linked to that type of experience and exploration. Mark Twain, do you know this line? My life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened. Thank goodness it's this way. So, mindfulness will also, this is the wise mind, break these patterns. It will break the patterns, the cycles of repetition. It helps us become aware more often instead of just being lost. And therefore we can make wise choices. And we can choose to keep the thought going or not. I can actually choose when there's that quality of awareness. Oh, this one, I'm going to let it go. Have you had a moment when you've chosen to keep thinking? Probably, no. Oh, just a little more time. This one's so nice, you know. And so you actually sense the pull. That's the desire underneath. Right? So you're really remembering that we can get entangled, and you can really also notice how much we give truth to the thoughts that we're saying to ourselves or to another person that says something about me. So many beliefs. And that's the point, that we believe the thoughts more than the reality. And when we believe them, that's the world we live in. We live in a made-belief world. And they're not the truth. Sometimes they have something very clear to say, but sometimes they're absolutely not happening in relationship to the truth of the moment. And especially if, for some people, there's obsessive thinking, which some people have. There's kind of in this obsessive thinking mode, people that cycle and really have a way that they're entangled. So the mindfulness will help. And by way of labeling, you're even helping more that mode of seeing it as a process, as a changing experience. It comes and goes, just like the breath comes and goes. How many moods have you had today? Probably quite a number, right? Happy moment, sad moment, bored, unhappy. Everything. If there's one thing that we can say is permanent, it's change. It's change. Changes, changes. But we live this truth from the inside. So we actually feel the possibility of transformation because at the level of reality, experience, it's not so solid. And so we don't need to grasp. We don't need to contract. The experiences, they come and they go. Come and go. Come and go. We clearly see that we can't choose our experiences at times, but we can choose to be present or absent. We can really choose to be present or absent. And that makes the whole difference. Being much more in tune with life. So there's one aspect which I'm just going to state and then end. It's the judging mind. How many people today live according to views and opinions in the world? And how much fight there is owing to differences of views and opinions about anything. There's a climate change? No, of course not. There's no climate change. There is a view, right, for some person. What is this person thinking? No, climate change, And so, different views, different opinions. Worldviews. Worldviews, of course, views in terms of how we can bring more peace in this world. So judging mind is at the root of this. And that's thought. What are judgments other than thought? No? So it's so helpful to actually begin to include this aspect. How we relate, and that we have judgments, the narration, the commentary. And usually judgments are not neutral. They're not very serene. So there's some kind of aversion underneath. And as Yuka said last night, judging is in the field of the hindrance of aversion. When the mind is judging, there's a lot of rigidity. There's kind of a fixation. You can feel the mind hardens. My point of view is more valid than yours, and I keep to my view. So this is a really central aspect, actually, to look at. And we kind of are intimately connected to notice probably the emotional reactivity when we want to be right. This is what it's about. I want to be right. Or I want things to go this way. And here, we see more of that because the mind is more silent. and the environment is more silent. So of course it's gonna appear. I don't know about you, but I've had so much in my own practice. More opportunity to watch the judging mind. To the extent of saying, I can't be with this mind anymore. It's impossible. Am I always like this? Am I? All that I'm experiencing, you know, there's a judgment attached to it. There are moments when it's like that, right? The I am. And actually, it's the sense of self. It's the sense of self that is manifesting because it wants to protect itself. So it has something to say. The self-centeredness. You can see that the being is flourishing. It's opening. But the me in there, whoa, it's becoming really quite big. And so judgment helps a defense mechanism. That's what happens. And so it gets contracted and quite present. So the attitude is here very clear that we can, with our wise mind, discerning mind, see judgment as judgment. And there is this wise mind. There's mindfulness, there's wisdom. The mindfulness as it is explored, manifesting, is not holding judgment. If you can see a judgment, you can see it from the prospect of a wise mind, right? A mind that can see clearly. Can you be aware? Yes, I can be aware. Can you be aware of judgment? Yeah. So there's awareness. And that is not lost. That's not suffering. That's what we want to grow with. That's what we want to progress. And that's what's happening. So we see much more clearly. And then we don't need to get lost and or entangled. Grasp so much. We don't need to fight against. No point. Seeing is freeing. You don't need to battle with the thoughts. In the seeing, because it's clear seeing, is the freedom. And it happens. Has it happened today? One moment of seeing and poop, whatever trouble you were in, gone? Has it happened? Yes? It has, yes, you see. I'm trusting those that have. So, it's amazing because when that happens, it's like, wow, how did I do that? Probably you stopped doing. That's what happens. You stopped wanting it to change. You stopped the battling. You stopped doing something. So this is insight. It's the experiential wisdom. And it happens. So the compulsiveness tends to diminish. The compulsive habits tend to diminish and the wisdom grows. This is the progress of insight. And with a discerning mind, then we can see the problem with much more clarity. Judging mind just reacts. There's aversion. With the discerning mind, you can say, okay, this is the next step I need to take. Right? Whether it's for myself or another person. It's receptive. It can see. And in relationship to other people, it's the same process. With discerning mind, you can hear something that is unpleasant to your ears, you're not agreeing with, right? They absolutely have an opposite thought to yours, a view, which is not yours at all. And yet, with discernment, you still have some flexibility, some openness to be able to say, okay, this person has a different point of view. It doesn't stop from being a person. We can respect each other. We can respect our differences and not battle, which is exactly what is happening today. With the judging mind, we only see the person through the judgment we have of them. Very limited. So this is why we need to open the view. But discerning mind means, wow, I explore. Maybe I don't know what's going to be the outcome. So it's again touching the ground of not knowing. We don't know. But there is discernment. For me, the judging mind, it's always kind of staying in the realm of the known. What I know, I want to secure. And then I fasten the belt and I completely contract and I separate from that person, from that which may threaten my being. So many, many different aspects that are being involved here. So it's very paralyzing when that happens. We can have opinions, but it's also helpful to not get fixated in our opinions. It's helpful, really helpful. So at times helpful to turn the attention to the emotions. And we will be talking a little bit more about emotions in the next few days. But thoughts and emotions, they're very linked. So I'd like to end with a poem, which is a poem from Rumi. This poem is exactly the progress of inside the path. Having patience, having the time to flourish, and then to gather again the energy, to collect the energy, and to stay in ourself, stabilize, balance. So it's not one way or the other. It's both. In breath, out breath. Stability, openness. This poem is called Bird Wings. Your grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to where you're bravely working. Expecting the worst, you look, and instead, here's the joyful face you've been wanting to see. Your hand opens and closes, and opens and closes. If it were always a fist, or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence is in every small contracting and expanding. The two as beautifully balanced and coordinated as birdwings.